She's not all looks. She's brains as well.
She's also hustle. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you?
Hello, Hotline Design listeners. Thank you so much for coming back to the podcast this week. As a pre-episode note, Yusin, Lavinia, and I talk about the tragic murder of Sarah Evernard, which happened this past week in London. And we thought it really important to discuss this given our experiences as young women in London. If this content is too distressing, we talk about it from 1 minute and 15 seconds to about 7 minutes and 30 seconds in the timestamps, so you can skip ahead if needed. Of course, we do encourage people to listen, and ultimately our thoughts and prayers are with Sarah's friends and family at this time. Thank you so much for listening.
So Lavinia and Yusin, how have your weeks been?
This is actually quite a hard one to say, because do I start with like the bad stuff? I think all of our weeks have been a little bit clouded by the tragedy of Sarah. It was so clouded that I actually found that I struggled to do anything else, because I was a bit, I don't know, just sad and catching up with all the updates and all of that. So yeah, I really didn't want to start on a bad note, but it honestly is how it was. It was definitely kind of the overall theme.
Especially as it developed, as you mentioned, like throughout the week, like from when she was kind of like missing to kind of confirmed that the remains were identified as her, to this Metropolitan Police officer being taken into custody, kind of in the process of being charged. So
yeah, it was
a very, very difficult and disturbing week for sure.
Yeah. I don't know, yeah, I was going to kind of like spin it into a positive of kind of what happened at work, but I almost feel like it doesn't matter. I don't know, it's just a weird one.
Yeah, I mean, like, one thing I can say is just, I've become, just in this past week, it's been great to have the opportunity to reach out to female friends to have this discussion, because I find it's the most powerful but also consistent with kind of yuppie women. So like, you know, 20s and 30s, young urban professionals. So we briefly spoke about it on Wednesday. Mm. And I thought it was so interesting because Lavinia and I joined the call first, had a kind of conversation about it. And then Yusin joined and brought up the exact same points. So I felt very connected to kind of my younger female friends, unfortunately, because of this shared experience. But it was amazing just how consistent the conversation was.
Yeah, and how consistent our experiences are, yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it was definitely a roller coaster of emotions throughout the whole week, and especially as we kind of watched the case evolve. And I think everyone was hoping at the start that she probably just wandered somewhere and would turn up again. But obviously it was something a lot more sinister. And I think it's just made a lot of people I know around me, especially women who can, like you say, relate to the same experiences or have had experiences of being harassed on the street. I think everyone can definitely relate. It obviously it's very, very sad, but I think more than anything, it's been quite infuriating that in 2021, and you know, in a relatively developed city like London, how it's just really sad that, you know, you can't walk home without being subject to some sort of harassment or verbal abuse in the street. I think it's just quite unacceptable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then the development of even the vigil being held in Clapham Junction and Clapham Commons, and just seeing how specifically the Metropolitan Police kind of handled elements of that, it was especially disturbing to see them kind of manhandling women, and kind of dragging them away, like the Metropolitan Police, of who the suspect is connected to
Yeah.
as a off-duty police officer. Like it just seems incredibly tone deaf.
Yeah. Definitely
So
some the start to the week.
yeah, and just of course, like our thoughts and prayers go out to Sarah and her family and all women that have felt unsafe and unfortunately will continue to feel unsafe in some capacity. The conversations being had as well, like it's beyond unfortunate that this is the action that had to happen to spark it. I've had conversations with a couple males in my life, and these are the right conversations to be having, but it's just so unfortunate why they've kind of been sparked at this point.
Absolutely. Hopefully it won't be like the tragedy will be a flame for something positive.
For sure.
Yeah, I guess like you say, I think it's good that it's sparked so much discussion of what everyone can do to keep women safe. It's sad that it has come to this point, but I do agree, you know, we're having these conversations now, and it will hopefully spark a turning point in the way even cases considered traditionally like mild forms of harassment are being treated. And hopefully that will be one really concrete action that we can take away from this as a society.
And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we talk imposter syndrome. What is it, our experiences, and tricks and tools we've learned in order to combat it? So, Lavinia, you said, what did you ladies get up to this week?
Yeah, so week two of employment from my end. I have just worked with a client to redesign their site map and make sure the information architecture of their website is correct. And that was a really fun little project. The client I'm working with is really lovely, and they were whenever I was kind of presenting something, they were like, yes, this is great. Everything is great. Obviously, sometimes that can be kind of, oh, are you sure I'm doing everything right? Because you're overly kind of enthusiastic about it. But it felt very sincere, and I was really happy. So, from a work perspective, really successful week. Yeah, what about you?
I've had a pretty good week too. A lot of it was spent just collating user insights and then playing back these research insights. Tried to make some sort of nice deck as well because I feel that people tend to respond better to something that's quite visual. And I had a lot of different post-its and things written up, but I figured I'd try and collapse it into some sort of like conceptual diagram, almost like a user journey. And I think it resonated quite well. So I'm quite happy about that. And then I've just been working on some high fidelity screens, which has been quite good. I think my client actually has a pretty well-defined design system, so and pattern library, so it's been quite good to just pull components from that existing library and just clip some screens together just to get some initial feedback on it. So yeah, work's been pretty good. And then on the side, I've been doing some design work, I think I mentioned previously, for a charity project, and I've been doing a bit more of the visual design and illustration work for that piece. So I felt quite proud because I designed all of these things in Adobe Illustrator and then I exported them to Figma and created some sort of illustration library, a la Pablo Stanley's Humans. So I thought it went quite well and I'm pretty proud of that. So yeah, that's how my week's been. And then I've just also been trying to get back into language practice, and Clubhouse has been really great for that. So I've actually been trying to work my brain by practicing Mandarin, which is my second language, and then also like French and Japanese. So it's been quite good. I've really enjoyed talking with people I barely know all over the world in Clubhouse. So that's great.
I love that. Just so casually, like, yeah, three languages. It's absolutely amazing. And Yusin, the listeners at home can't see this, but your wall and clusters behind you, it's just like the most beautiful background of like multicolored post-it notes. It's like now become aesthetic. It now just looks so amazing. And I think you just need to maybe shellac them to the wall afterwards so they just like become one with the paint on the wall.
That is such a good idea. And then I would take a picture of it and put it on Pinterest, and then people would be like, hey, I really want that. Like, I want to be a designer too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It can
Ugh.
be a designer's wallpaper.
Exactly.
That is such a good shout. Hey, that reminds me of, what's his name? Is it Bobby Burke from Queer Eye? He designs his
Yeah.
own wallpapers. Maybe you could have a special Queen's Post-it Notes
Workshop
wallpaper edition.
wallpaper.
I know, we're not basic. Having just t-shirts and mugs as merch. We have wallpaper.
Yeah.
Woo.
The Empire. I'm so excited. And speaking of things to be excited about, a really great thing happened this week. We made a little kind of mural how-to for our Instagram. And I just thought, why not just tag mural app official in it? So I did. And not only did they share our little post, but they also followed us. So thank you for being a friend of the pod, Mural. This means the world to us. I was entirely starstruck. So
Yeah.
I truly am a designer in that I'm like, wow, Mural following us. So
We didn't
just
choose a life of fame. The life of fame chose us.
exactly. I've pre-ordered a 3-pack of cat-eyed sunglasses for each of us because we are too famous now.
I can't wait to kind of walk around the streets of London together with our cat-eye glasses. It's
We should
gonna
do
be
a
a
proper photo shoot as well,
Oh yeah,
wearing our
absolutely.
cat eye sunglasses, some new promo material for Hotline Design. As Lauren
Exactly.
would say, it's gonna be a leak.
A leak.
A look.
Yeah, and then other than being completely famous, I've just been packing up my flat and also just doing qualitative data analysis. So it's been quite a week.
She's not all looks, she's brains as well.
She's also hustle.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like you always give such great tips on user research, and even last week when we were, sorry, or was that the week before when we were talking about rainbow charts? I thought that was such a great tip. I have yet to use it though, but it's definitely what I'm storing in my UX research arsenal.
Yeah, no, and I'll have to share it. And it was actually the person I was working with that introduced me to it. Yeah, as I said, in a world of white, black, and Microsoft blue, to see like such a beautiful rainbow chart that I guess can only be compared to Usain's wallpaper. It was just so nice to see something so vibrant. So speaking of looks, we're going to talk about imposter syndrome, a look that we've all had at points and that ultimately we are trying to combat. And of course, we would just not be a design podcast if we did not do an episode solely dedicated to imposter syndrome. So for those of you keeping score at home, our definition for imposter syndrome is imposter syndrome can be defined as a collection of feelings of inadequacy that persist despite evident success. Imposters suffer from chronic self-doubt and a sense of intellectual fraudulence that override any feelings of success or external proof of their competence. And these people seem unable to internalize their accomplishments, however successful they might be in their respected field. And a fun fact about the history of imposter syndrome that maybe is not so fun is the syndrome was identified in 1978 by psychologists Pauline Clarence and Suzanne Imes. And they believed that imposter syndrome only affected women. But of course, subsequent research has shown that men are also affected. And the early kind of thinking was women have less and kind of lower amounts of testosterone, which they kind of perceived to be like the confidence hormone. So that's why it was originally kind of thought of as a female disorder.
Very interesting. I also wonder if it's because men have historically not been encouraged to talk about anything that would make them look weak, And I think partly imposter syndrome, if you admit to the fact that, you know, I don't feel like I belong here, it has a little bit of a weakness attached to it. Actually, no, I'm going to change my word. It has a little bit of vulnerability attached to it, which is not something that has historically been encouraged. So, yeah, I wonder if that's part of it as well. Just me speculating on historical facts. Please don't take them as... Yeah.
I really love that view, though. That, like, don't allow men to, yeah, as you said, be vulnerable and kind of share their feelings if they're feeling kind of inadequate.
And also, I was going to say, that's a really interesting fact because I never knew that imposter syndrome had actually been formally identified. I just thought it was a common feeling or a phenomenon that people were experiencing, but which was just casually labeled imposter syndrome. It's really interesting to know that it's been formally identified by research.
And then we've got some more stats here. So in a survey done with 3,000 adults in the UK, 2/3 of women, so about 66%, reported suffering from imposter syndrome, compared to 56% of men within the last 12 months that the survey was done.
I also read somewhere that 58% of tech employees report that they suffer from imposter syndrome. I've also read that it's something that also affects people who aren't necessarily from a specific country and living there. We can call them immigrants, we can call them expats, but it's probably related to the fact that in our case, none of us were born here, so you kind of have to adapt to people's ways of working, their banter, and everything else, which probably... Yeah, it definitely has made me feel like an imposter at times where I, like, someone would say something and it would make no sense to me, but it would just be like an English type of joke or something.
Like coriander instead of cilantro. Why are all the herbs here so confusing?
Exactly. But yeah, there's a few things. Do you know, like, crisps and chips as well? Like, I would call everything chips and they would be like, these are crisps.
It's so confusing. And then when you go back home and you're like still using the language from back home and you're like, I don't fit in anywhere. No one understands me.
Basically. And that does definitely contribute to a bit of imposter syndrome. But yeah, it's quite interesting how basically being an immigrant / expat, then working in tech and being a woman makes you more likely to have it. And guess what we all are.
We love math here on the pod. Being a woman times being an immigrant to the power of working in tech
equals you figure it out.
Yep.
Yep, we check all the boxes.
Please call in and crunch the numbers.
Yep.
So just kind of as a question, why do we think that more women are likely to experience imposter syndrome?
I think just kind of building on what we discussed in a previous episode, I feel like women are often less confident than men, and I'm not sure if this is due to an upbringing issue or I think it's across different societies. I think women are often perceived as, you know, maybe more soft-spoken, and they kind of have to project that image as well in the workplace. So I feel like if a woman is too direct, or, you know, if she behaves in a way that's not traditionally very feminine, then people often call women out for that sort of behavior because they're not embodying what the stereotypical woman behaves like in the workplace. And I think women are almost sort of socialized to be really nice and really kind, which also means that if they have strong opinions about something, they often have to couch it in layers of language, or they often have to play the nice role in the workplace. I think these behaviors that we embody almost kind of make us less confident. We're always so insistent on getting something right or something perfect before we feel like we can present it. I think there's a really famous statistic that maybe you both have heard of, but 90% of men will apply to a job even when they only meet something like 50% of the criteria. Mm-hmm. But women are much less likely to do that, maybe because they feel less confident about their abilities. And I think this definitely makes women feel inadequate sometimes when they feel like they don't check all the boxes. they feel a bit held back and so are likely to experience imposter syndrome in that way.
And I dug into the recesses of my iPod to find a quote that I love that definitely supports everything you've been saying, Yusin. And I'm sure the listeners at home know this one. It's from this really like indie artist named Beyoncé, and her song Flawless. And she samples Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Apologies because I know I butchered that name. She sampled one of her quotes, and she's a Nigerian author who gave a TED Talk right here in London, and then yeah, it was sampled onto the song. And the quote goes, "We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition." You can have a stroke, but not too much. We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition, but not too much. You should aim to be successful, but not so successful, otherwise you will threaten the man.
Wowza.
Yeah, very impactful. And that's a good point, actually. Historically, men have always been the breadwinner in the family, and I guess sometimes, maybe in very patriarchal cultures, the woman isn't seen as ambitious or is taught to be less ambitious so that they don't threaten the man's sense of self-confidence. And I think that quote really kind of encapsulates that.
Be the supporting kind of act as opposed to the main kind of front and center star of the show.
When you were speaking, Yusin, when you were saying that kind of we've been socialized to be the kind, nice ones, I was also thinking that we tend to also be a lot more agreeable, tend to avoid conflict a lot more, which is sometimes a very healthy thing to happen in organizations. And because we want just people to agree either between each other, with us, or to move forward in peace or whatever, I think we're more less likely to be quite assertive, which is a necessary type of quality to probably advance in the workplace and to actually build confidence as well. Because when you just want kind of peace around you ultimately put your opinions and your needs second to that peace. And I think that in itself can contribute to, yeah, more of that feeling of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. I definitely have felt that way in the past. I don't know about both of you, but sometimes when you're working in a team and everyone has really strong opinions, you just want to be that person who can help things progress and you take on this role of being really diplomatic. And I'm not saying that it's purely a role confined to women, but I find a lot of the time, because we are sort of socialized to be like that or to kind of make sure that things work, we try and make the whole team cooperate. And like you say, because of that, you often feel like you can't have very strong opinions or you kind of try to dial down your successes, I think. And I think that really does translate into maybe not feeling that adequate and can cause imposter syndrome.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, on that point, Yusin and Lavinia, I'm really kind of interested to hear more about your personal experiences with imposter syndrome, how it's kind of manifested, and just how it appears kind of.
Yeah. I think from my perspective, I kind of looked up to the Western world my whole life. Like, I remember just growing up in Romania, like, you kind of look up to, like, UK, US, France. Whatever is kind of Western, and you kind of think Lauren is looking at me like, you didn't mention Canada.
Whoops, Canada.
Definitely Canada as well. It's
Whoops,
just
22% listenership. Thank you to all the Canadian listeners.
we appreciate you. But yeah, like I remember growing up basically in Romania, like we were just looking up to the West a lot and we thought, oh my God, they must be smarter and better than us in so many ways. Or at least I did. And I think when I moved here, I was really, really grateful, but equally it does It's kind of like when you look up to a society like for a long time and you're here, you're kind of like, am I good enough to be here or whatever? I actually definitely got over that, but it took a quite a while. I would say a few years to feel like I'm kind of I belong here. And I do now, definitely. But that probably was kind of the root at the start of not feeling like I belong. And then with tech, I've never been very kind of the techie slash sciencey slash, yeah, just STEM person. I used to like history and geography and languages and stuff like that in school. So having a job in tech was really cool, but again, not something that I would have thought I was gonna land in. And then I've also always been such a continuous learner. Like, often I mention in my weekly thing, like, the book I read, because I have this constant insecurity that there's more to learn and I'm never there. And probably the worst part has been something that I've worked on and I feel like I'm much better at. It's just been comparing myself to other people and feeling like when you look around you and you feel like everyone's got it together, or at least some people's got it together, and you're kind of like, why don't I like have it together? And then you kind of start talking to them and you start to know them on a more personal level and you realize it's actually like what they look like to you, but behind what you see, there's a lot more happening, and in reality, what they go through is very similar to what you go through. And equally, I found that people around me didn't realize that I was struggling from that perspective. Like, people would come to me and think that I had it all together, which was quite humbling to find out. So yeah, I think that's kind of like my main stories with it. I definitely, probably because I don't know, I feel like I'm almost 30 now, although I do have a few years, but that's how I feel. It's definitely gotten so much better, and I am grateful about the fact that the older you get, the less you care about what other people think. Therefore, you don't feel an imposter around them because you don't really care that much about what they think.
Yeah,
That's
you
my
just focus on like the back pain and not the haters.
Exactly,
Do you ever get tired of dropping truth bombs?
yeah. Never.
It's just who she is.
New merch, new slogan.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I definitely resonate with everything you just said. I think imposter syndrome happens in so many different layers, like we discussed earlier on. Sometimes due to your gender, sometimes due to the fact that you've arrived in a new country and you feel like you don't really know the work culture. And also to your point in tech, I think I definitely feel a lot of that. I never really had an interest in tech when growing up, and I think when we were talking about origin stories as well, I always thought I was such a Luddite. I did geography at university, and for the longest time I was thinking of working in international development and didn't expect to end up in a tech consulting company doing UX because of that, and the fact that I didn't really have a traditional path into UX design, or really a traditional design path where you go to design school, like learn everything there is and then kind of throw yourself into it. Definitely starting out, I just felt like this wasn't where I belonged, and I was constantly questioning why I decided to embark on this career path. You know, just kind of having all these fears in my head that I wasn't good enough and that people would find out that I wasn't really meant to be here. And I think it doesn't help that in consulting, and I'm sure we've all experienced this, you're often thrown like straight into your project and expected to learn very quickly the industry, the client, the work. And I think that just kind of makes you feel like you don't really know what you're talking about, especially when you have to go to a senior client and explain what on earth this sort of like tech thing is. And there are many times I was thinking that I really didn't suit that career. The other thing I feel with imposter syndrome is, as designers, we often want to deliver things that are not only functional but also beautiful. And we spend so much time just trying to make our designs pixel perfect and being really, really perfectionist. And I think that's quite related to imposter syndrome, because when you feel like a piece of work is not good enough, you're constantly questioning your own abilities and your skills. And so yeah, I think I've definitely experienced a lot of the things you said you have. And it's quite comforting to know that lots of us feel the same way, especially designers. I think, I suppose we'll talk about this as well later on, but something I have tried to do is remind myself that done is better than perfect. Even if something is not amazing, you know, the important thing is to just get it done out of the way, because you can always iterate and improve on it later on, rather than getting everything right on your first try. But what about you, Lauren? What do you think?
Yeah, I resonate with essentially everything you gals have said. I think it's difficult coming from it as a self-taught UX designer. I studied health studies and gerontology, so it seems like a kind of far departure, even though a lot of it is just like very human-centric, just older humans. So I think being self-taught and not having that academic foundation, which I was so familiar with, was a bit of a challenge. And then I felt very much like I'm not a real designer, in quotes, especially when we kind of, in our company, there are also agencies. So they've got people that are like, that came up through design school working with these individuals, even though we bring both of our strengths and weaknesses to the position, especially like from the side of working as a consultant who also has UX skills and being able to kind of coach the people from the creative agency in the like the ways of the consultancy. You still can't help but compare yourself, and they might have kind of more methodology behind things, more of a process. It's a great learning opportunity, but it also, it in a way serves as a point where the mirror gets kind of held up to you and you start comparing yourself to others and thinking, am I good enough? Also, Yusin, you mentioned, yeah, as consultants, we do get sold that 100% we can do it, 100% we know what we're doing. We have 30 years of industry experience, which is impossible given that we are all flirty and under 30.
Do you remember this year I'm aiming to learn Figma and get 5 years of experience?
Yes, in
That,
1 year.
yeah, that's basically consulting.
Exactly. So it's really, sometimes it's going in there with a smile on your face and kind of lying about your skill set, which in a way can like erode your soul and make you feel like, yeah, no, I can't. Even though you are very competent and do have like the skills. And as you were saying, I think it's especially hard as well, kind of with UI or trying to make things be functional but also look really great. There almost is no perfection in creativity. And then ultimately, I think UX or product design as an overarching umbrella, it is so vast and so wide. And so I have people that approach me and they're like, so can you do this like amazing illustrated website with a horizontal scroll? They're like, yeah, but you're like a graphic designer, you can do that. And I'm like, well, I'm actually not that
No.
good at like drawing, because it's such a large term. People think you can do everything, and then when you can't, they're like, you know, you go back to the mirror and you reflect and you're like, am I good?
Start
Can
crying.
I do this? Am I an imposter? So yeah, in those ways, the inner saboteur, as RuPaul calls it, comes out, and it's that voice inside your head that tells you you're not good enough. So I think while you can hush the inner saboteur, I think especially in our line of work, the inner saboteur likes to come by and like whisper in your ear.
Absolutely.
When you said inner saboteur, I was getting this image of, you know, sometimes in like cartoons, they've got a little angel and a little devil on your shoulder. Like, they're constantly, or the devil's constantly telling you that you're not good enough. And I think lots of us who face imposter syndrome often feel that there's this nagging inner critic of like self-doubt telling you that you're not good enough. And it's really important to be kind to yourself and remember that you're being too harsh.
Most definitely. Speaking of someone who is also curious about imposter syndrome, we've got our Hotline Design Hotline caller.
Hi, Hotline Design Hotline. My name is Bella and I'm a long-time listener, but a first-time caller. And I just wanted to ask, do you ever stop feeling like an imposter in your career? and just about any helpful tips and tricks that you might share about that.
I have good news and bad news, in my opinion. So I went once to this leaders in UX kind of panel, and there was this lady there that just sounded like she had all the knowledge in the world, and everything she was saying, I was like scribbling away. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna use this. This would be so good in these type of situations, and just incredibly, yeah, just knowledgeable. And kind of at the end of the panel, I think someone did ask about like, how do you deal with imposter syndrome? And she basically was the head of experience at this massive, basically, what is it? Big four accounting firms, which I have no idea how now they're doing experience design, but they are. But yeah, she was doing, she was basically head of design there. She was headhunted from one of the best agencies in London to basically kind of create this incredible design team from the roots up. And she was telling us how on a daily basis she still struggles with imposter syndrome, because basically she's being put in these situations that are always new, always working with clients in areas that she has no idea about. Like, apparently she had to be in this boardroom and advise one of their clients in, I think it was experience in VR, and she hadn't done VR work before, but she basically had to deal with that in a way that was both honest, where, look, I have this experience and I know how to deal with it and I'm sure it's applicable, and confident. And it is hard when you feel like you don't really know what you're talking about. So I guess part of the question is, do you ever stop feeling like an imposter? And I think the answer is no. But equally, what I recently kind of realized, so you'll probably find out that I'm a massive nerd for like self-help and stuff. But I have, before I started my job, I basically created some values to go into the job with. And one of them was confidence. And I wrote down confidence from resilience. I want to have the type of confidence that comes from the knowledge that I have the ability to figure everything out rather than already knowing it all. Lauren is like...
Preach! Like, that is so good. I'm like, yes, Lavinia, take me to church.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. But I kind of, yeah, I just... This was something that basically the penny dropped for me when I was listening to another podcast. And I was like, why do I basically, I don't know, tie my confidence to just knowing things? When in reality, we have always been put in situations where we didn't know everything, but we figured it out. And in a way, we are imposters at work, because you never solve the same problem over and over again, and that would also be boring. You always are faced with new problems, therefore you don't know how to solve them, therefore you kind of are an imposter, because you don't really know what you're doing, because it's new, and no one knows what they're doing. And I remember Seth Godin, in one of his interviews, was saying that no one who did anything big and important knew what they were doing, because it was never done before. So how would you know what you're doing if you're just creating something? And in any job that kind of involves creativity and leadership, that's always the case. So yeah, I feel like this was a massive monologue. But what I kind of want to to leave our lovely caller with is just that, no, it will never go away. But it's something that we can embrace and build our confidence from, knowing we can figure it out. That's all.
Amen.
So well said.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree with everything you said. So much insight in there, and I think it also kind of raises the question of, is imposter syndrome always a bad thing? Like, not necessarily, right?
Great because, question.
Like you said, it's impossible to know everything, especially when we're working in a creative domain where things haven't been done before, or you have to figure out the process along the way. And I actually think that a little bit of an imposter syndrome can sometimes be a good thing, because it just makes you aware that you're not, that there is a lot more to learn, and then it kind of gives you the motivation to go read up and, you know, like Lavinia, create a self-help guide. I think that's pretty awesome. So I think sometimes, you know, a little bit, maybe imposter syndrome has a negative connotation to it, because, you know, imposter is quite a negative word in itself, but I think sometimes I remind myself that it's okay to not know everything. No one is an expert in every single thing. You often have to figure it out along the way. And like you said, you know, I think as long as you have the confidence in yourself to believe that you'll be able to learn things very quickly, or you know how to learn things, I think that's just a really good trait to have in general. And as long as you have that ability and you believe in yourself, I think that's a very good way of tackling imposter syndrome. Because even if you don't know the answer, you know what resources you can rely on to help you figure out the problem. So I think that's a really, really good point. I think what I've found quite helpful for tackling imposter syndrome is just looking back at my past work. And I think it's really satisfying to see, well, I mean, it's equal parts cringeworthy and satisfying to see work you produced a couple of months, a couple of years, or even a couple of months ago, where you're like, oh God, how did I design that thing? Because it just doesn't look good. I didn't consider all these things in the UX. You know, I didn't think about how the user would feel. And then you look at the work you do now and how you work so much more quickly. And this was actually one of the tips given to me by my friend from Singapore. And she said, you know, one of the ways in which I tackle imposter syndrome is just reflect on how far I've come. And I think it's good to constantly do those reflective exercises and just be really proud of things that you've delivered, because it just looks a lot better now and a lot less shit, than things you did in the past.
I love that.
100% agree, Yusin. And we're going to have an explicit label on our podcast now. Whoops. From the swearing. No. I love it. Yeah. So thank you for calling in, Bella. So from my perspective, and we've touched on this before, but I think it's important to look at, is the imposter syndrome productive? If no, because like if it becomes quite debilitating, or it just is unnecessary negativity in your mind. If no, what is? How can you reframe the thoughts into like, maybe I'm not good enough, to maybe say, well, what resources can I get to enable me to be good enough? What questions do I need to ask to solve the problem? I also think that it's super important to have a community of trusted colleagues or friends around you who you can bounce ideas off of, because you might find that just by sharing your ideas with like a design community, that actually they're really solid. And not only that, but you'll also have the opportunity to learn from others. Then I've got quite a superficial tip that I subscribe to in my search for the ultimate Luke, which is dress to impress. Dress like someone who really knows what they're doing. So I love a very bold blazer, huge shoulder pads that exudes confidence, even when I'm silent and just like walking through the office. I've had a lot of people tell me they thought I was a manager when I was an analyst because I was extremely overdressed. Kind of dressing like a boss really, really helps. Then to add like a chunky boot so you got some height as well. I cannot recommend it enough. And I really miss my blazers in this economy. I have to say, I don't dress up for Zoom work as much as I used to dress up for the runways of the office.
I have a relevant quote here that, yeah, I guess helps me sometimes. But I think it says, when you look good, you feel good. And when you feel good, you do good.
Yes. Snaps. Take me to church again, Lavinia.
Say it louder for the people in the back.
Yeah. If you ever are in a situation where you need a quote, just call me. Be like, Lavinia, here. This is what I'm facing. Give me a quote. Yeah.
We need a separate hotline, design hotline, for just like an emergency quote.
Yep. So, yep.
Yeah. I mean, the power of a chunky booty, a blazer, and a bold brow. Like, you would be surprised, even though I do have a fringe and no one can see my bold brow. So it's kind of a waste of my time. But still.
But you know you've got them.
Exactly. And that's all that matters.
Mm.
Exactly. I too have a quote from the recesses of pop culture, as if our indie artist Beyonce was not enough for today. So this is from Mindy Kaling of The Mindy Project. Lovely, lovely show. And she says, I have a personality defect where I sort of refuse to see myself as the underdog. It's because of my parents. They raised me with the entitlement of a tall, blonde, white man. And I love that. I think that one should assume the character of Fred from Scooby-Doo and just go in there. And even though there's a monster rampaging the amusement park, you go in there and you say, yep, I've got a plan. Let's split up, gang. And you speak with confidence, even though we all know Fred has no clue what's going on. You sell it to the team. You make it work.
I'm definitely going to go into all my meetings now feeling like Fred.
With like just a wig of like plastic blonde hair.
That would be a leak.
I'd have to say, like, his leadership style, while just kind of very vanilla, is impressive when you think that he is leading like kind of a bunch of stoners and a dog. So even though he had a hard task, I think it's really important to kind of embody that male energy.
Amazing. I hope these help, Bella. We shared a ton of wisdom.
The pearls of wisdom.
We think.
And of course, take what you would like from our various soliloquies. Well, thank you so much, Bella, for calling in. And thank you so much, Lavinia and Yusin. This has been our podcast for the week. And as always, if you would like to get in touch and be on our Hotline Design Hotline, you can always submit a question to anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and then on Gmail at hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. I will catch you ladies next week.
Thank you.
See you. Bye. Next week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.